It's episode 94, and as we head towards episode 100, I'm continuing to bring you people who are affecting change in the world, and this person is no exception. Breaking Into is next.
You are tuned in to Black Hollywood Lives. Breaking Into.
I chose this song because we're going to talk something really deep, you know, this whole episode, but I wanted to do something joyous, because we both want something... joyous.
Absolutely.
It's going to be a lovely day. We really work towards it, right?
Absolutely. I like that.
So this isn't the original that Bill Withers did. This is the remake that happened in the 90s. With Soul System. I love them. You'll see some early... Watch the video. Early Michelle Visage is the one doing the rap on this. Of Drew Brawl's Drag Race fan. Hi, you guys. Welcome to Breaking Into. I'm your host, James Lott Jr. We're here on Black Hollywood Live. I'm so glad you could join me again today. I'm so excited. I have a really great guest. Somebody, if you watch my show regularly... You actually have seen it before in episode 81 as one of like 10,000 people that came in the studio. But they were all nice. That's why I like them. They were all nice. And they're all hustlers, too. We'll talk about that in a second, too. They're all hustlers. Every one person in that group is working it out. But episode 81, he's part of the series that I just continue to rave about. Called Chill 2, the series. And you need to run, don't walk, and watch the series. Absolutely. We need a season 2 because I didn't know what's going to happen. But we'll get to that in a second, too. But he's a writer, creator, and he plays this weird character named Rick. That's a whole other story. He's also a singer, songwriter, philanthropist, humanitarian, humanist. I'm trying to work it out.
I like that.
Strong black man.
Yes.
Okay, we need that. There's plenty of us out there, too. Don't let it get twisted. And he also has a new project we're going to talk about. Also, we have a whole great show for you today. Mikel Barlow, how are you?
Hi, how's it going?
See you in the claps. Down, everybody, down. He'll be here for a while, down.
I like it.
Welcome to the show again.
Thanks for having me again.
Of course. We were supposed to get together a little sooner, but I had some family issues that happened, which you guys all know about because I've told you all about them, but we're doing a little better. So we got them in. First, follow us on iTunes, YouTube, SoundCloud. We're all over the place. We have a Breaking Into page. And I actually posted the short film we're going to talk about a little later. It's on that page. And also, I posted episode 1 of 202, the series, on that page. And we're going to show a clip of one scene that was just so bizarre with him. That's going to be a show that we have a whole bunch of stuff going on today. Now, you've been around for a while, from Atlanta to LA, around the world, you've done things.
Yeah, I've been trying to make it happen for a while now.
I mean, that's the thing. You're one of those people like I am. We're creating our content. We're collaborating with people who have like-minded ways.
Absolutely.
Like Justin, for example. Our buddy Justin, who was on the show. And like I said, you've done music and TV. Is there one thing, I'm not going to say which one's the best one you have to do, but is there one right now that you're really gravitating towards? Is it music? Is it web? Is it TV?
I think right now what I'm spending a lot of time doing is writing. Like, I'm doing a lot of writing, screenwriting for television. I'm slowly working on this feature film that it's really dear to my heart, and so I'll work on it, and then I'll put it away, and then I'll bring it back out. So I'm doing a lot of writing right now, a lot of producing content, and I just finished writing and producing a pilot that I'm looking to kind of shop around.
You worked on something with a buddy of mine. He's part of it. Because you know, it's a small world.
Yeah.
My buddy Nick Marty, here. We love him. Called Liver Ants. I just saw Nick the other day. I love Nick.
Yeah.
And I saw that he was part of your problem. I'm like, small world. I'm like, it's all over the place. Small world.
Funny enough, when I came to the show the last time, he was walking out the door as I was walking in, and we had just auditioned him for the the show.
Two tall guys.
And I was like, Nick, hey, and he was kind of like, after we've worked together, now we're like really cool, but at the time I had only auditioned him, and he was like, hi.
It was kind of weird. Maybe a little weird at first. I just left the audition room with you, and now you're here, and you're like, yes. He's a great guy, and I say they saw that you used him as one of the people in that Deliver Ants is what it's called.
It's called Deliver Ants.
Okay, and what is that about?
It's about a... bug farm that is trying to get on its feet, and they employ ex-cons to come in and kind of work with the bugs and get the place in shape. And it's kind of a mix between The Office and Superstore.
Oh, funny. Okay.
Yeah, so it's all shot in mockumentary style and everything.
So it's a comedy.
It's I'm 100% a comedy.
No special episodes.
You know, you never know.
That's how it's true, too. You never know.
You
right?
never know you never what's know. Needed.
Yeah, I love that. Okay, so talk about this stuff. First of all, you know, you've done music. Yeah. That was the first thing you had. You released an EP. Yeah. And you released an album.
Yeah.
I got to work with people. The EP was called Dreaming Clear, and the album was called Sound Therapy. Worked with people like Rodney, Dark Child. People know all the songs, Dark Child, everything in the songs. You know, people who name check themselves in songs.
Yeah.
Jerkins and stuff. And so you got to do that. And I just want to show people who may not know what a nice voice he has. Here's a piece of a video of a song that was a title of, like, same as a series you were doing.
It's a series that I did.
Yes.
Called New Stage. Yeah. With Mike the Situation.
Yes. I'm like, wait a minute. Talk about how random that is. From the Jersey Shore, you guys.
Yeah.
They did a series together. I mean, like.
Yeah, and the producers of that show liked the song so much that they changed the name of the series to the song title, and it was the intro of the song. And the song is what actually got me on the show, because they just wanted the song. And then they were like, wait, we have this role. You want to come in and you want to do it, basically? And I was like, yeah, sure.
That's amazing. That's also a lesson in you never know how you'll get in.
You never know. And that was shot before I actually moved to Los Angeles, and they paid me well for all of that, and I used that money to move out here.
Wow.
And that was 6.5 years ago.
Wow.
You know, that's why I continue to just kind of do what I want to do, because I'm like, you never know what's gonna take off, what someone is looking for in the moment. And not that I do things just
not randomly, but I know what you mean.
But because that, you know, that song, this music video that we shot, it was after I graduated from college, and I just was writing music with a friend. And I was like, you know, it'd be fun to make a music video to go with it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with a little kind of old school camcorder, walking around town kind of thing. But, you know, it opened a door for me.
Which, that's like one of those things. You just don't know what. Everybody can tell you, do this, this, and this, and you'll make it, not necessarily.
Right.
There's also other ways to get in there somewhere.
Right.
You know, and whether it's music or a video or like somebody walking through the door.
Right.
Or, I mean. So I was just a beautiful voice. I want to show this song. And who's playing guitar?
So my friend Paul Blackburn, he actually co-wrote this song with me. Just kind of hanging out in the apartment one day.
Yeah.
And so.
Walking down the street again, thinking about just everything, realize nothing's the same for me.
Where's the shot at?
This is shot in Valdosta, Georgia, where I went to college.
Yes. When you look at it, what do you think? When you look at it right now,
it takes me back, because, like I said, we were just kind of. Justin, who actually shot my short film, and 202, the director of it, he actually shot this as well. And whenever this comes up, he's always like, we've come so far, just even in skills and creative endeavors.
Cool. You can see it's on YouTube, you guys. There's a bunch of videos of his on YouTube and songs. But this is you have a really beautiful voice.
Thank you.
It's just really nice, and it's a nice song. The guitar is a really great guitar. That's why I asked who played it. It's like, see, you came from that.
Yeah, yeah.
What a great start.
I mean, it was a lot of fun, and it was what I needed to do at the time.
Okay. Now, is that how you are these days, when each of your projects, it's what you need to do at that time?
Yeah. I'm always prompted by something that's going on in my life or in the world or whatever to make the things that I make, whether that be, you know, a series or a song or an album or whatever. Like, I always want to be influenced by something, what's going on, whether it be personally or in the world.
Do you always know at the beginning that it's a song, or that it's a spoken word piece, or that it's
not always. Like, most of the time I'm just like, I gotta make something. Like this my newest project, the short film we're going to talk about, I was journaling, and it came from journaling.
Well, it felt very spoken word. I mean, like,
yeah,
just
it
completely.
Was. It was definitely my like just stream of consciousness thoughts that I was like, I need to do something with this. So, you know, that's kind of how I operate. Not everybody does it that way, but that's kind of
weird. I'm learning the same thing, actually, because I do a bunch of, I have a poetry book out, I do things, and I'm learning the same way. Like, the creativity's coming, the divine intervention's coming. I just don't know what form it's going to take until maybe partway in. Oh, okay, it's a song. Got it. Oh, no, okay, no, it's a story. Okay, I got it. It's, you know.
Absolutely.
Yes. And luckily, you have people around you that can help you get these things to fruition.
It's always great to have people who are gifted in other ways to kind of make it happen, you know? Like, I learned really early on that I can't do much of anything on my own.
That's true, right?
So it's a blessing.
What did you study in college?
I double majored in philosophy and religious studies.
Okay.
I got a minor in communications, but it was because I was going to be a pastor.
Oh. Well, you're sermoning in another way now.
Yeah.
Through art.
It definitely, it was an organic move. And so, you know, it feels like what I'm supposed to do.
You felt the calling still is there.
It's still there. I'm just doing it in a way that I wasn't necessarily like thinking when I was in school I was going to do. So,
having education was, how important is that?
It's I even though I'm not using my degree, I think that it's 100% important, because for nothing, if nothing else, it showed me that I was able to accomplish something, that I was able to do something from start to finish, but also my college experience was monumental in making me who I am. You know, you meet people from all kinds of places and walks of life who think differently and challenge you in ways that if I was just kind of hanging out with my family or my friends from high school or whatever, I wouldn't have been challenged. You know, here I am today because of all the challenges and all of the relationships that I built in college.
I agree. I think, you know, you said something that just I think about all the time. I was able to complete something.
Yeah.
Some people, you know, they start a lot of things, they'll finish them, or they don't feel like a sense of accomplishment.
Yeah.
You could say, you got a piece of paper that says, I did do this.
My mom was like, you better finish. And I like, my mom is a huge advocate of education, and because she's a teacher.
Oh,
and
she was like, you,
because I remember going to college my freshman year, after the first semester of my freshman year, I came home for the holidays and was like, Mom, I think I'm just going to go and sing. I'm not going to go back to school. And she was like, what are you talking about? And I was like, I just feel like I want to sing. And she was like, no, you want to go to school. Get that degree. And so, you know, coming from one of those kinds of families, I she didn't push me to finish, but I understood the value of it. And so I went and I finished. I took a year off in the middle of it, but I did eventually complete.
You don't have like 2 credits shy of a graduation hanging over you. Like, it's been 10 years later. And
I finished because I wanted to, you know, it was important for me, but also for, you know, my family to see me walk across the stage and get a degree. Because I was the first one to do it. So, you know, my grandparents came. They're not here anymore, but I was the only grandchild they were able to see graduate from college. And so was all very important to me to do it. And so I did it.
Oh, I like that. That's so great. I mean, I like that. I decided even going further with that. That's so nice. That's really great to get to do that for them. But you worked on this web series. Let's switch corners for a second with Mike the Situation Sorrentino.
Yeah.
What was he like?
Well, how candid can I be?
You can be as candid. You can be whatever, as candid as you want. Nobody's listening. Just us. No one's doing anything.
I think at the time, now this was 6.5 years ago, they had just finished Jersey Shore. Okay. He was trying to figure out his next move. And
he was one of the most popular of all of them. Yeah,
he's like, yeah. He was trying to figure out his next move. He wanted to move away from reality TV, and so he was going to try his lot at scripted television. That's what this project was going to be for him. He was a terrible actor.
Yeah, there you go.
Like, and I think that they edited it well
to
make him look better than what was going on.
The magic of,
But it was a lot harder on the people who were in it that were actors. And I wasn't even one of them. I was a singer full time at that point. And so this was my first time in front of the camera as an actor. Okay. And I was doing my best, but, eventually that's how I ended up getting bit by the bug.
Well, then, but for you, so then what did it do for you in terms of, did it make you go, okay, I got to really know my lines. I got to really figure out what this means.
Like, yeah. Okay. For that, I took it probably more serious than a lot of other people because I was like, okay, this is giant books. Like, they just gave us all of the episodes in one, book.
Oh.
And I was like, I have to learn all of this. And so I'd done theater.
Okay.
But never on camera.
Yeah.
And it was weird for me at first. And but thankfully, I had friends who also got booked on that job. Justin worked the camera.
Okay.
And my friend Paul, who wrote the song with me, also worked on the show. They just kind of brought us all on.
Okay.
And so I was able to be like, okay, I'm freaking out right now. What am I supposed, you know, like, how, what do you think about this? What if I say it like this? You know, and so it allowed me to eventually find my comfort in it. But it was a great experience.
Yeah.
Good, bad, indifferent. Right. It was a great experience.
Well, I tell people who don't act, and I've done some acting. I don't want to be an actor, but I've done some acting. And it's funny because you're supposed to be natural.
Yeah.
So people don't know that, oh, you're supposed to be natural. It's very natural. Yeah, there's a camera sometimes right here.
Right.
Say it live one more time, James. I'm like, and don't be stiff. Okay. And oh my God. And like, there's a camera right here. Or stand this way and say it like this. And you're like, this is not natural at all. I don't talk like this, right? I mean, there's a lot of different things that go on that you learn, I'm sure.
I learned by doing, for sure. Because like I said, it was my first time. And I was like, well, I'm supposed to stand right here. Yeah, for this angle, stand right here. But for this angle, stand on your head. And I'm like, well, I don't know how to do that.
Right.
But, you know, they were gracious with me. And the other actors who had a lot more experience than I did were able to kind of, I mean, and even Mike gave me pointers because he worked with cameras.
Mm-hmm.
even if this was his first scripted thing, he was able to kind of give me some pointers throughout the process as well. But you know, I learned.
Oh, yeah, you learned. You did learn.
I learned.
Now we're gonna lead that into you creating something again. Must be going through your thing earlier. You're feeling something, and 202 comes out.
Yeah. I with 202, I had written another series, and the scope of it was way bigger than I was able to kind of take on my own. And so I was like, I need to do something a little bit more contained, but still something that I believe in and something that I think is necessary, at least for me to be able to see with my eyes. And I started kind of playing with these characters. I didn't really know. I just like, there, it's an apartment and it's these roommates.
Yes.
That's what I had. And I was kind of playing around with things. And Melinda Hale, who plays Naya.
The bomb. Love her.
She's amazing.
Yes.
We've been friends for a few years. And she called me up and was like, hey, we need to work on something. We've been trying to work on things for years, but it never panned out. And she's like, we really need to do something this year. And I was like, I have an idea.
She's like, uh-oh.
And she was like, let's go get coffee and talk about it. And I presented her with a few ideas, and she loved the idea of 202. And then she made a few phone calls, and we had a cast. And I was like, all right, let's do this now. And It was an amazing experience. Again, it stretched me because I was writing these episodes
yes.
on my own and then producing them with Melinda
mm-hmm.
and then also being in them.
Cut that for a second. Show this weird part right here.
Oh, hi, Lola. Now you're around. I need my money today.
We don't have it. Yeah, give us a few days.
I don't have a few more days to give you.
Is there any way we can work this out?
With you? No.
Here's my boy.
Hey, Rick.
Dwight.
Love him.
So, what if I give you this entire basket of homemade brownies? Would that keep you off from climbing up our asses for a couple of days?
What am I supposed to do with brownies?
Oh, these aren't your typical brownies. They're unique. We square?
I'll still need rent money.
There's some plenty more where that came from.
Okay.
Well, all right, Rick. Thank you. Have a great day. Why is he dressed like a cow?
What did you
I love that line. I'm sorry, why is he dressed like a cow?
Did you give
all them
drugs?
That's Lionel. We love him, too. We love Aunt Tia. We love all... Your whole cast is so...
They're amazing.
They were all here. Well, Lionel wasn't here, but the rest of them were here. And Harry and everybody. But you guys... And they're all hustling out there. Yeah. They're all doing stuff.
I'm so proud of everyone that was involved with 202 and the things...
Oh, wait. Did Tia have her baby?
Tia did have her baby. Her name's Phoenix. She's
gorgeous. Oh, Phoenix. Hi, Phoenix.
She's gorgeous, and she's already got some brand endorsements. you know? I expect nothing less.
Yeah, you're going to come out exactly. Oh, congratulations, Tia. That's great.
Yeah, they've been busy since we finished filming season one, and I'm very proud of them.
So, okay, so this series is really fun. It's fun. I bring that scene up for you because, like, first of all, I was like, who is this guy who's so, like, weird? You cast yourself as somebody really odd in the piece. And there's some really good acting in the whole cast is like, there's comedy, there's drama, there's slapstick. I mean, like, but you come in and you always come in and play this weird Rick, the weird guy.
Yeah, I part of it was I wanted to do something fun in terms of acting that was kind of out of my wheelhouse, so to speak. But also I didn't want to kind of be in the show, you know, like I didn't want to like be one of the roommates or like I just wanted to kind of try my hand at being weird and and show up every once in a while and that's kind of what I did. But the funny thing is that people are like trying to figure out what's wrong with him.
Exactly. Like, is he slow? Is he high?
A friend of mine was like, so are you high on? And I'm like, no, I don't know. I haven't quite figured out Rick yet, but he has a good heart.
Okay, he has good hearts. But I see people like, well, what is his deal? I think, what is his deal? I don't understand what's going on with him. Which is a good thing, man. Obviously, because you brought. What's one of the things that you learned about yourself producing?
And I'm a control freak.
Oh, okay, that's honest.
I'm absolutely a control freak. And what's funny is co-producing with someone who's also like, no shade.
Like, I guess shady Monday.
We love like both Melinda and I have very like strong opinions about things,
yes,
whether that, you know, in this project, sometimes we'd be like, well, I don't know, you know, she come to me with some notes about something and I'd be like, well, this is why I did it, or, you know, and we had to like figure out
how'd you figure it out. That's a good thing. It's a good start. How'd you guys figure that out? How'd you guys compromise? Learn to compromise.
I think that the compromise comes with because we would, most of our disagreements would come with the script.
Oh, okay.
And seeing it done two different ways, and then I go either I would be like, you're right, that works better.
Oh, okay.
Or but a lot, everything else, I think creatively overall, we were on the same page the entire time.
Interesting.
And because she she was like, I've always wanted to do a roommate show with black people. And I was like, well, that's what this is. And she, you know, because it was something that she's always wanted to do, she had a lot of ideas about what that she wanted that to look like. And as the creator, I had ideas, and we just kind of put all of the ideas together, and they worked out fine.
So I guess the bottom line, you can tell me if I get this wrong, but the bottom line between both of you guys was a good product.
Yeah, and that was it. Like, we just wanted to do something good that people enjoyed and that we enjoyed doing.
Right.
And
so whoever's idea was the best of the time.
Right. It was just like, do that. That's good.
Yeah.
And being a writer, I did have to kind of put my pride a little bit to the side and say, you know what? After I put it on the page, it's kind of up to everyone involved to see how it is displayed, I guess.
That must be hard a little bit because that's your baby.
Yeah,
but
it's hard, but I think when I kind of fix my perspective to say, but this won't be my only baby.
Okay.
And it kind of allows me to loosen my grip a little bit. And then not only that, I trust the people that I work with. And so that even allows me to loose my grip even more, because I'm like, you know what? I trust Melinda's creativity because I've seen her work.
Yeah.
I trust Lionel's creativity because he's
amazing.
Freaking amazing.
He's amazing.
I trust Justin's creative. Trusting the team is like it.
I guess also part of it would be to just go along with that would be, once you, it's on the page. They would say it's on the page, on the stage. Of course, that's first. Mm. But everybody's interpretation may bring something out.
Right.
That you're like, oh.
Yeah.
I'm sure with Lionel, I'm sure.
Lionel, that was him. Like, I was, after the first, like, read through, I was like, how about this? Just do whatever.
Because he's amazing.
I'm so excited about season two because now he's gone. He spent the summer in Chicago training as an actor. And so I'm like, I can't imagine he's about to come back.
Okay.
we had a meeting a few weeks ago, and like, it was cool to see everyone kind of mulling over the course of the last few months. So what's going? This is what I think's going on. And this is what I envision. Lola's next step is, or Steven's next step. And I'm like, I like that collaborative spirit. Yeah. It makes my job a lot easier when actors are like, I've been thinking about this character.
Well, so I felt it in the room. When you guys were in the room, I felt like it was a family. It was a team.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Who
just really enjoyed this project.
I was surprised by it because, you know, when you're talking about something that's a shoestring budget.
Oh, yeah, we kept saying on the show, it's like no budget.
When you're talking about a situation that, no like that,
yes,
you really have to rely on and hope for the people involved that they just want to do it, and if they don't want to do it, it can fall apart really easily.
Unravel.
And it's like, wait, you guys want to just hang out here and like shoot this, and it's hot, and you know, that's really cool. And like, I'll try and like scheduling, which is hard. I'm like, well, maybe, okay, well, you can't come, so maybe I'll just cut this scene. And they're like, no, I need that scene. And I'm like, all right. Or Harry's good at it. Harry will say, I want to be in every scene I'm supposed to be in. Like, I know that scheduling is difficult, but we have to figure out how to make sure I'm in all the scenes I'm supposed to be in. Okay. And I'm like, all right, well. It makes me feel good because it means you really like this project and it means something to you as opposed to just a job or a this thing that somebody roped me into.
Right.
And so I love the cast.
They're great. And I think also part of it is, you know, nowadays you create your own content. It's also a showcase to people what you can do.
Yeah.
So, you know, because I know you do a lot of auditions and things, but like, this is also something finished that they can go to for reference also.
Yeah, absolutely.
For any of the actors.
It's for everyone involved. Exactly. That's what it is, like a calling card of sorts.
Yes, exactly. Now, one of the things we brought you in here especially for is for your latest project that I saw on Facebook, and we're going to show a piece of it, of course, and let's go ahead and show. Let's show a piece of it first, and then we're going to talk about it.
Okay.
It's the best thing to do.
They tried to.
Go. No problem. Oh, it's a man in the booth.
They tried to end me. Crush my bones to dust. They tried to make me disappear in blood and ash and rust. When they found my soul was hard to kill, they bound my hands in chains. Convinced me of my destiny. To live this life of pain. These chains became a uniform, a badge of desperate fear. They drag me down relentlessly. Scream, no one can hear.
So I want to show that I could totally get into watching this again, the whole thing, but we can't do the whole show with that. But when I first saw it, I cried. Oh. I get to hear that again when I watch it again. It affected me very heavily. Mm. I'm much older than you are, and I think it affected me in a way that it still does, of being a black man from 1969 to today, just having to deal with the different decades I've had to deal with, the different versions of what being a black man is that's changed and not changed.
Yeah.
So when I first saw that, I remember just crying.
Yeah. I mean, I it was emotional for me to see it.
So I mean, I could turn it again. but it's okay. So the title, the mixture. I want to make sure I pronounce this crazy. Who is the title?
It's Oro.
Oro. Okay. And what is it from?
It is the Igbo word for found.
Okay, so I had looked that up. I saw that. And how did? I mean, it's a very powerful piece. How, so you said you were just journaling?
Yeah, I was. So over the past few years, I've been kind of dealing with my own emotional responses to things in the world. You know, from...
We've had some stuff in this recent years, yes.
You know, whether that is that all of the police brutality and then the reactions that America had towards that, and then the Black Lives Matter movement, and then Colin Kaepernick and this current administration and all of that. And a couple years ago, I had made a decision that I was going to stop fighting with people on social media because it just wasn't good for me emotionally or mentally or physically even. Because I come from the South.
Yes, you do.
And I had spent a long time building relationships with people who were not people of color. I consider them my friends, my really close friends. And some of them I consider family even. And as kind of this very fragile race relations in America kind of start to unravel, I would voice my feelings about these things on social media, and I was met with a surprising amount of backlash from people who I thought were my friends.
Right.
And so I was like, this isn't good. I'm not doing this anymore. But then it just kept coming, you know, and then I think when the Unite the Right protest happened, and the response to that from people and the administration, and I didn't know what to, like, I legitimately didn't know what to do with myself. And so I just started writing. I didn't want to take to social media and, you know, ball up my fist and, right, you know, go to town, but I needed to do something, if nothing else, but to figure out what I was feeling and what to do with all of my emotions in the matter. And so I started writing, and I was just writing and writing and writing. And I had planned a trip to the desert with a friend, to Joshua Tree. And after I had written in my journal, I was reading through what I'd written, just kind of processing. And I was like, I want to do more with this idea than just close my journal and be, you know, because it became something that I needed to say. And I didn't want to just type it up on social media and leave it for people to argue with me about. I didn't want to make a, you know, a video talking at the camera saying, this is what's wrong and this is what you need to say and this is what needs to be done. Like, I didn't want to do that because, you know, it's a lot of people,
everybody's doing that.
And it opens the door for a lot of arguing, and like, I just didn't want to do any of that. And along the same time frame, over the past couple of years, I've also been doing a lot of research into my family history, and in my processing of my feelings of current circumstances, I found a lot of strength and hope and courage in reflecting on the past and saying, you know, I'm here because they survived. We're here today because we come from people who, by one way or another, made it.
Yes.
And there is a lot more to take from that than just saying, oh, slavery, it was such a bitch.
Right.
But to say, you know what? All of the stuff that they went through, all of the things that they endured, the product of that is us. Now, we can make the decision for that product to be a good, positive thing, or continue to allow ourselves to be a victim.
Wear the chains as uniforms, you said.
Yeah, thing. We can choose. We can continue that living oppressed, or we can say, you know what? I'm not oppressed, and here's why. Because I'm standing. I'm not oppressed, and here's why. Because I come from people who made it. And not everyone, you know, not everyone did. And, you know, I in my research, I learned that, you know, taking some DNA tests and things like that, I learned that one of the tribes that I come from are the Igbo.
Oh,
and that kind of, that helped me kind of find a certain peace about it all, because, you know, even in the traumatic experiences of being taken from your land and on a ship for months, and people died on the ships, and whoever it was that I come from didn't. And then, you know, they landed over here and endured the however many hundreds of years they were here, and all the things that, you know, everyone knows what slavery was. You know,
I couldn't pick cotton. Sorry. I got soft hands. I couldn't pick no cotton. I've been to cotton fields. No, I mean, and I say it jokingly in a way, but I say it also for real. When I finally went to South Carolina, I saw actual cotton fields and how it's rough around. The cotton's the pretty part.
Yeah.
The rest of the plant ain't pretty.
And then you got to get all the seeds out
of it. Oh, my God. And it's the
briars. Yeah.
So our ancestry hands, there were no gloves, no Playtex or whatever. It was like they were out there day after day.
Right. And there is something to be said about, well, just from a personal place. I recently found in my research that my great 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 grandmother, who was a slave, had my great 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 grandfather at 12.
Wow.
And his father was a white slave owner, and it took me a while to kind of swallow that.
Yeah.
Because I was like, what must that have been like? And she went on to have three more children with this owner.
Which happened.
And I kind of was stunned for a while. And I told my mom about it. And, of course, she was very stunned by it. And I was like, what am I supposed to do with this? And then I did more research and... what I realized is that, again, she endured whatever that circumstance looked like. She endured, and eventually, they were freed and were given 230 acres of land to then figure out how to do it there. Yeah. You know, and I think about her and I go, I'm here because she didn't give up. You know, that 12-year-old girl didn't give up. And if nothing else, I owe her to stand.
Yeah.
And I owe her to make sure my voice is heard. And that's why you know, all of those things are the reasons why I felt like I needed to make what I made.
I think this is why I cried, because I felt I was crying for, it felt very modern, even though you were talking, I mean, even though you were in chains, the imagery was there, the music's really good too.
Yeah.
But the imagery was very from the past, but it was like everything you were saying could apply today.
Today.
And that's, I think I cried because I'm like, how sad is that?
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, why I found such strength in the past is because I have to be strong today. And it's not the kind of strength that makes me want to go and punch everybody or like fight everyone who opposes me, but it's the kind of strength that says, you know, I'm not going anywhere. If you have a problem with that, we can talk about it. But I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah.
And I'm not going anywhere. My beliefs aren't going anywhere. My opinions about things aren't going anywhere. Who I am is not going anywhere. We're not going anywhere. And either you can be okay with that or not, but I've definitively said, I'm not going anywhere, I'm not moving, so it's the issue is now on your end.
Yes.
And whoever you are.
Right.
It's on your end. And because I when I was saying how I didn't want to fight on the social medias and anything anymore, it's because I spent a lot of time with people trying to shut me up, trying to invalidate my feelings and my opinions about things and telling me how I'm supposed to react and how I'm supposed to respond. And I was like, no, I'm done with you trying to quiet me. I'm done with it. And I realize now that typing up on Facebook is not the way to let you know that I'm not being quiet. But what I can do is use my gifts and my talents to display what not only how I feel, but how I imagine hundreds and thousands of people feel.
Yes.
And do it in a very creative and undeniable way. And I am inspired by people who do it on grander scale. Like, there are writers and creators and producers, you know, that are doing those things on much grander scales. But what I'm capable of doing right now is making my short film. And, you know, it's heartbreaking and it's beautiful and it's from me.
And it's educational.
Yes.
And it's necessary. And it's timely.
Yeah.
And that's why...
Unfortunate.
It's unfortunate. Like I said, I think part of the reason why I was crying is I'm like, you know, I was born in the middle of civil rights movement.
Mm-hmm.
I was one of the first children bused in the 70s.
Mm.
Segregation. Didn't work.
Yeah.
You know, grew up in the rough 80s and 90s here in L.A. and the race riots and everything was going on here with police. I've been stopped by police as 2 years ago. I had a SWAT team on me.
Oh, wow.
In West Hollywood. Just a SWAT team on me at a 7-Eleven. And I was scared for my life.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and as you guys all know, I'm a regular person.
Yeah.
But I'm black. Yeah. And it's like, and I think I was crying for all of that.
Yeah.
Going, this is really speaking to me, but this is also so sad that this is still happening and that even me, I can walk out, I'm on television, I'm on radio, I'm all over the place, and I'm not dressed in hood clothes, and I don't argue with police people.
Yeah.
And I had a SWAT team with rifles in my back.
Mm.
And I'm on a random Sunday afternoon at 7-Eleven here in Los Angeles.
Yeah. And that,
and they yelled at me and screamed at me, and I could have been shot in 2 seconds. And my white friend was standing right there and watched the whole thing happen.
Mm.
So he was my witness.
Yeah,
you know, it's like it's just that this is still going on. This is not a joke.
It's and I think that's why I felt so pressed to do what I did, because I think that for a lot of people, I was reading something today where someone said that racism wasn't real. And of course, like, all of the internet jumped.
I'm sure.
And was like, maybe it's not real in your little world, but for those of us who experience it, it's very much real. Yes, like, people can say media sensationalized things or whatever, but like, as a black man in America, I can attest that there are things that occur that I'm like, well, why the hell did that just happen? Thankfully, I haven't experienced the things that you've experienced, but I've experienced my share of bigotry and being from the South.
Right, yeah.
And I think also more so than even just experience outright racist bigotry, I've experienced being quelled. And that's almost more dangerous, in my opinion, than pointing a gun at me.
Well, I can see that.
Telling me that what I'm saying is wrong and that I shouldn't say it anymore infuriates the hell out of me, because it's like, who are you to tell me that my experience is invalid? It's very much valid. And you know what? I'm not going to try and convince you that it's valid. I'm just going to say that it's valid and move on.
Yeah.
And, you know, my tears that I cry for people who've lost their lives just in the last few years from police brutality and ridiculous riots and all of that. Like, I know that the effort to, even when someone responds to that, it's like, oh, well, that they should have done this differently, or they probably shouldn't have worn.
It's not
that.
Race. It's a class thing.
And I would kind of swallow those things sometimes and kind of go, you know, but then when you kill 12-year-old Tamir Rice,
There were a few situations where it was like irrefutable.
Irrefutable.
I mean, we all could agree. We all saw it. So if you saw, and someone's going to try to, you can't dispel that. We all just saw that.
We just saw it. And yet somehow it still was an argument.
Yes.
And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to move forward being who I am and creating.
I like that. So I like that a lot. Yes.
And I if people are convinced along the way, that's great. I love my white brothers and sisters and everyone. Like, I love people. I mm-hmm. love people. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to waste my time trying to get people to see my point of view when they are adamantly opposed yes. to doing so. And I, for my own mental health, for my own emotional health, I can't do that.
Right.
But what I can do is creatively express the things that I'm feeling.
I would do more of that because I think you should do more.
And I want to, because it was so therapeutic for me.
I'm sure.
To shoot that. And it was a hot day in Joshua Tree.
Oh, I'm sure.
And I endured a lot of, like, I had burn marks on my thighs from laying wow. on the gravel.
Oh, wow.
But I was like, but I'm going to do this because I felt like what I was trying to say needed to be said. And, I've never been that emotionally raw in front of a camera before.
Wow.
And Justin, who directed it and shot it, he was like, okay, like we were finished shooting the scene where I was screaming, and we finished shooting that a few times, and he was like, okay, let's not do that anymore. And I was like, why? He's like, I don't like it. And I was like, well, why don't you like it? He was like, I mean, it's incredible,
yeah,
but it's really hard for me to see.
Wow.
And I was like, and I was like, I understand.
Probably as a friend perspective.
Yeah,
maybe?
Like, yeah, he okay. was like, I can't, and he is the ally of all allies.
Yeah, yeah, I know he is. Yeah.
But, and I think that's why, because it stopped being black people and it became me.
Yes.
And, you know, I think that's also part of the reason why I wanted to do it, is because a lot of my friends need to kind of stop dehumanizing the situation and see it as me, or see it as someone that they know. And that, I mean, and I think that applies to all sorts of mm-hmm. situations, whether that be LGBTQ rights. It's easy to dehumanize mm-hmm. a culture of people and kind of say, well, they don't need this, or they shouldn't be that, yes. or black people should just be quiet,
yes,
or
right.
sit down, or right. whatever. And it's like, okay, thank you for letting me know how you feel.
Yes.
Now replace those things with me. Do you still feel that way? Do you still think I need to sit down? If you do, we can't be friends anymore. One.
Yeah, that's true.
Two.
Right, number one.
Two, there are things that you need to deal with in your heart. Like, I come from a religious background, which is why it was so jarring for me, because most of my friends were like church people and people who like follow Jesus. And I'm like, well, I know that Jesus wouldn't respond to these things mm-hmm. this way. Mm-hmm. Like, and for you to try and figure out a way to say that he would mm-hmm. blows my mind.
Right.
But, this to date has been one of the, my most, like, I'm most proud of this project, because it was just entirely my heart poured out. And without any editing, without any like, well, maybe I shouldn't do it this way for more marketable, because I don't care about all of that.
Right.
In this instance, I'm not trying to market anything. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to say what I want to say in a way that maybe perhaps people might listen.
I have one complaint. Mm-hmm. Why isn't it on YouTube? I didn't see it.
It is on YouTube. I think it's private, maybe.
Because I find it on Facebook. I want people to see it.
And I'm going to. Because the reason why I private it on YouTube was because I was submitting it to.
Oh, okay.
But then I thought about it, and I was like, you know, I would love for it to be in festivals. So if there's
festivals,
love for it to be in festivals, but that was never my intention for making it.
Only people will see it. I think we need to see it.
And I 100% agree, which is why I kind of started to post it around, but I'll unlock it.
I really think it's a very important piece. I have a grandson. I have kids. I think they need to see it. I have people I know who need to see it.
Yeah.
Who would love to see it. I'm sure it would affect them the same way. I just think it's very important work that you've done.
Yeah,
that's why I'm complaining. So I'm like, why isn't it out there? I mean, you go to your Facebook page to see it, but I'm like, it should be out there more. And for me as an older Black person, it just warms my heart to see that the next generations are actually thinking about stuff like this and producing, you know, we're in the forefront of producing great content, Black people, and whether it's music or fashion or whatever, but also art. And you know, as we know, artists of all colors, a lot of great art comes out of stuff.
Oppression.
I don't want to say that word oppression, but I just want to say stuff.
Stuff. I like that.
Because we're not saying oppression anymore,
erase
right?
Erase oppression.
It's out of stuff that's happening in the world. And yeah. I think of thinking of LGBT, I think of Keith Haring, who I was a big fan of his painting. And there's a section of time when, back in the 80s, when AIDS was really big and there was no help being helped by the government, his paintings got angrier. It was so interesting. He used brighter reds and darker oranges to kind of make it. Was a whole period where it was like he was angry, but it was through his art.
Yeah.
He was showing you the nicer periods. Then when it wasn't working, you saw the progression. And I love that. I just think it's like he was telling you in his art, I can't take this anymore.
I can't take it anymore.
And in your art, you're telling people, I can't take it anymore.
I'm done.
You're done.
I'm done.
Yeah, you gotta be you.
Yeah,
you gotta be you. I think it's a side that you. I'm very proud of you. You did a great job with that.
Thank you.
Now he was on the show before, so I don't know if you remember what he said last time. But I always ask my guests to answer these two questions at the end of the show. And you know, I believe in language, and obviously you do too. You're a writer and everything. And what is one word or I've changed a little bit or phrase?
Okay.
That we should not say anymore.
Huh. Wow.
I forgot what you said last time. I was gonna write it down. I forgot what you said last time, but I did change it to phrase now too.
I'm gonna say, to kind of lighten the mood, I'm gonna say I think we should probably get rid of all iterations of the word lit. Because I feel like we're smart people. We can say things with more syllables than that. Like, I just think that about a lot of things. But then I find myself saying those words. Because it's easier. But I like more coherent.
Syllabic words.
Words.
There you go. Yes.
Yeah.
And then what word or phrase should we say more of?
Hope.
My favorite word.
I think that we should say that more, believe that more, seek it out more.
Because a lot of people feel there is no hope.
Absolutely.
And we have to somewhere. I mean, I think I'm an eternal optimist on some level. I don't know why. people say, oh, he's smiling. I know what it's like to have tough times. Trust me, I know it's like to have tough times. And I grew up poor and all that. I understood it. But I always somewhere felt that there must be hope out there somewhere.
Somewhere.
Didn't our ancestors feel the same way?
And
that's what
brings me to this place of hope is because I'm like, they had to have hope to even be able to get up every day and to endure the things both during slavery, post slavery, 1975. Like my mom had me when she was 19 years old, and I'm saying, Mom, I don't know how you did that. I don't know how you did that by yourself. How did you do? I mean, she had my grandparents help, but like that, and I think about all of the things that people before me had to have endured just so that I could live my life the way that I live my life. And it all boils down to they found hope somewhere. Even if that hope was in me. They found it somewhere. And, you know, if my great, 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 great grandparents made it through another day in the cotton fields because they had me in mind, then it would behoove me to make the most of every opportunity that I have and to blast past all the things that stand in my way, both good mm-hmm. and bad. And so, hope.
Yeah.
Because, you know, in 150 years, there's going to be people that I hope will look back on me
yes.
and say, he must have had a lot of hope. He must have hoped in greater things to come, because here we are.
Yeah.
And we're here and we're doing and we're being because he had hope and he endured.
They're going to say that. They're going to say it.
I embrace that.
They're going to say that. And as you know, I lost my grandmother recently, and so she's somebody who couldn't drink out certain water fountains in the South until she saw me on television at my own show. So that's how it works. Mike Kell, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
What a wonderful conversation.
I loved it.
And I am very proud of you.
Thank you so much. I'm proud of you as well.
Thank you. Tell people on that camera over there where they can find you on social media.
You can find me on social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, at Official Mikell. That's Official MYKELL.
That's right. Don't get it wrong.
Don't get
Mikell. That's right. You can find him. And you can find him on my page. I have my page and some of his works on there. That full video is on my page, Breaking Into, on Facebook. So you can go ahead and see it there. And of course, it'll be part of this episode, which will be on iTunes, YouTube. Share with everybody you know who needs to hear this. We had a great conversation. Share with the kids. I'm going to share with my grandson. Share with everybody who needs to hear this kind of stuff that's going on, because there are people out there who are doing good work and are creating great content. They're doing it out there. They're doing it. I'm James Lott Jr. You can follow me where all James Lott Jr.'s are sold. All over the internet. I'm just all over the internet. You know, I'm everywhere. Trust me. Everywhere you want to be. My latest book is out, called Becoming a Hardy, How It Changed My Life. And it's my fastest selling book to date. And thank you, everybody. Thank you. Thank you, everybody who's actually spending money to buy it. I appreciate that. You can find it on Amazon. And of course, my song, I Am Ready, is on iTunes, SoundCloud, YouTube, Amazon, Google Play, Amazon. It's all over the place. It's my conscious dance song. So go ahead and buy that. I have some good messages in there, too. And I will see you guys next time.
From executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Christian, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us. info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio, Instagram me, at KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in. The views expressed here are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.